91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Stay tuned for the acclaimed Miami Music Project, which is ardent about top-notch music instruction for talented young people. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman. The Miami Music Project sponsors its own children and youth orchestras, as well as a month-long summer music camp. There's a teaching artist training program and the renowned orchestral boot camp for Miami-Dade public school kids, many from disadvantaged backgrounds. We'll visit with world-renowned maestro James Judd, who founded the project 8 years ago and still instructs, as well as its director of educational program, bassist Stephen Liu. So the baton rises in minutes after the news. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents, 6 minutes after one. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns tomorrow. And we have a great program today. Let me just say that Paul Leary is periscoping this program live right now. It's on Twitter. You go to @topicalcurrents so you can not only hear it, but you can actually see it. Making music is a vibrant force of joy and skill. It's often a vehicle of personal transformation. Today we learn more about the Miami Music Project, founded by famed conductor James Judd in 2008. Besides his numerous current international orchestral endeavors, which we'll find out about, the maestro was artistic director and conductor of the Florida Philharmonic for 15 years. Alas, that orchestra was disbanded in 2003. Welcome to you, Maestro James Judd.
Thank you.
And in just a short time, we'll be joined by Stephen Liu, who's the director of educational program, as well as Miami Music Project alumna and a student. So, James, it's great to have you back. Joe is very sorry to miss this opportunity.
My best, please.
He sends his best. He says you're one of his favorite guests.
Oh, that's very sweet.
No one else should take offense, however. So congratulations on your new appointment with the historic Slovak Philharmonic Orchestra. Tell us about that. How did that come to happen?
Oh, I've been going there for many, many years, actually, since before the Iron Curtain came down, because when I was assistant conductor of Claudio Bardo, with the European Youth Orchestra, he had a special wish to take this sort of democratic orchestra through the Iron Curtain. Then he started an orchestra of the countries behind the Iron Curtain. Anyway, cut a long story short, I've been going there for many, many years. And it's a wonderful orchestra, 120 players, a chamber orchestra, one of the best professional choruses in Europe. And contemporary music. I mean, it's amazing, this little place, the government supports three orchestras in Bratislava alone in a country that's only under 5 million people.
That is just different priorities.
And education, too.
Right. Yeah. And are you going to be conducting in that 1773? Is that where you conduct that concert hall?
We have a beautiful renovated concert hall right there in Bratislava by the Rhine, yeah.
By the Danube. Wrong country.
<Excuse me.
laughs> Let me ask you what it's like moving into, I mean, you say you've been going there for years, but you conduct in so many different places. Each is a new culture, you know. How challenging is it to move from culture to culture to conduct? I mean, I know it's a common language, mm-hmm. but...
Yes, that's right. It is. And as a conductor... the moment you're on a rostrum in front of those incredible musicians of any language or whatever, you just give an upbeat and you get on with the music. And it's the same everywhere, you know? I mean, orchestras sound different in different places. There is a different style of musical preparation, learning of instrument technique sometimes. But it's the same wonderful thing. It's an incredible experience to stand in front of, whether it's the Miami Music Project kids or whether it's the Bratislava Orchestra, wherever it is. It's just the most magical thing to do. I'm so privileged.
Well, let's talk a little about conducting, because you said before the program just now that when you're waiting to go out on stage, you are really wanting to go out there, and yet it's the last place you want to be right before you go out there. And so you have this love-hate relationship, it seems like, with conducting. Explain that.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think I really would love to be kind of invisible.
What does conducting. That mean?
Well, because a conductor is a misconceptions, really. A conductor shouldn't, in a sense, exist. It should be the composers who originally were performing their own music. So we just exist to keep the music of the dead composers alive, I suppose. But, you know, we're the secondary. We're one musician as a conductor amongst the whole load. And the conductors I most admire, the people like Abbado, who I worked with,
right.
Bernard Haitink, these great, great, great conductors. Bernstein, in his very different style. It's all about making chamber music, about making music together with friends on the stage. You have to become friends very quickly. You have to trust one another in the most intimate way in a matter of minutes. And then when that happens, the conductor is just one. And which of the great artists said, painters, said that ideally you disappear into the canvas when you feel that a painting is finished and successful. And it's the same thing with a conductor. Even when we're leaping around with our hair
flamboyantly,
that's really what we're doing, we should be doing. It's just directing, just manipulating the music a little bit, but drawing out the individuality and the artistry and the personality of every player on stage. Then it really works.
So you just mentioned that, you know, originally composers were their own, they conducted their own works.
Yeah.
Do you try to imagine, do you keep in your head how perhaps, you know, Rachmaninoff would have conducted this piece?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's wonderful, Rachmaninoff. I was doing last week a program with Rachmaninoff, and we can listen to Rachmaninoff, you know, on tapes these days. On YouTube, we can hear Rachmaninoff. We know the sort of style. We can have a lesson from Rachmaninoff. But it's not about what did Rachmaninoff feel. It's really about transferring the feelings of that music to the feelings of the audience, you know, for them to discover something that's in their own lives, that the music, that they can respond to through the music. It's this thing that draws us all together in the whole world, and that's the magical thing. So, yes, we try our best to understand as near 100% as we think we can of
right.
what the composer intended, and to be true to that. But in the end, you have to be, it has to go way beyond that.
Well, let's listen. Speaking of Rachmaninoff.
Well,
we're
listening to Rachmaninoff's Third Piano Concerto. That's the Frost School of Music Orchestra. I mean, they're playing beautifully, absolutely beautifully.
And that was Anna Christia?
Yeah, she's a pupil of Santiago Rodriguez, a great, great pianist who teaches there. And Rachmaninoff, we can go and listen to him play that concerto.
Exactly.
And not to copy, but just to understand the spirit. So Rachmaninoff so often is sentimentalized, but never when he played his own music. It's hugely romantic, but never sentimental. And there, the nobility is fantastic when you hear him play.
Tell us the difference between sentimental and romantic.
Well, sentimental implies to me, at least, exaggeration or something artificial. But sentiment, the true sentiment of romantic music, I mean, Bach is, in a sense, a romantic composer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we categorize Baroque, classical, romantic,
right,
contemporary.
Right.
But, you know, there's romance in every music. There's the emotion that's felt from Bach when he writes is similar to Rachmaninoff or Mahler. We just find it in a different language, a different structure. But we must connect with that. We must portray it and enjoy it and celebrate it.
Have you ever composed?
Yes.
And?
Oh, you, it's all scrapped. That was years ago. It was awful. Okay. It was pretty terrible.
I just had two questions that came to mind. One is, you know, Mahler, I know you love Mahler, and you're known for conducting Mahler. How do you choose your works? Do they go back to old loves that you had when you were a child? Do they conform to the audience or the orchestra that you're performing with? How do you choose works for an entire season like
that? Well, now, my ripe old age, I enjoy doing new work. So if an orchestra asks, will I do something new, like next week in Ljubljana, we're doing Bruckner Fifth Symphony, which is a work that I feel very close to, I love doing, but we're also doing a very interesting contemporary work, a string work. So I love to do the pieces that I feel close to, you know, that I've enjoyed conducting in the past or things, and I enjoy doing new things. I mean, the week after or so, I'm doing Nielsen's Sixth Symphony, which is not a new work, but for me, it's a new work. I've never done that symphony before, but I'm, you know, I love it, so it's a great opportunity. So it's a mixture of things.
A mixture of things.
Old and new friends, yeah.
Which is great. Mm. I have more questions we'll get to, but before we need to take a break, but you conducted live from Istanbul just last November, the Schumann Piano Concerto in A Minor, Gülsün Önay, the pianist. Do you want to talk a little about that? Because we're going to listen to that as we go to the break.
Well, Istanbul has three, at least, fantastic orchestras. One is from Tekfen, a company, and it's a world peace orchestra from that region. So you have Turkish players together with Iranians and Syrians and all the Kastans that are in that area. It's fantastic. All these different styles coming together, Romania, Bulgaria.
Isn't that amazing at this time? I mean, it's so important right now, something like that.
Yeah, and the company is amazing. There's another company, Borusan, that have their own symphony orchestra, and then there's the Istanbul State Orchestra. I mean, it's just the music, the festivals they have, the fantastic music drawing people together, full audiences. Music's the answer.
I'm wondering if audiences in Europe are younger overall than they are in the United States.
Just in some places. I mean, there are some places, but on the whole, we're facing always the same challenges, that the audience tends to be older. And they always historically have been. There's reasons for that as we get busy as students, having families, and then coming back. So the most important thing of all, that's where we come back to the My Music Project, is getting music in front, available for everybody, every kid.
And not cutting it in the curriculum. And we're going to talk a lot about that when we come back.
Great.
But we're going to go to our break listening to James Judd, Maestro James Judd, conducting the Schumann Piano Concerto. Thank you. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you, and we're talking about the Miami Music Project, and now we will talk a lot about them with Maestro James Judd, who founded the Miami Music Project in 2008. And now we'd like to introduce a passionate staff member of the Miami Music Project. He's Stephen Liu, who's the Director of Educational Programming and also an acclaimed bassist. Welcome to you, Stephen.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
It's great to have you with us. So just tell us, well, before that, James, first tell us about, you know, your passion for the Miami Music Project, how you conceived of it, and why you founded it.
Well, I mean, it was thanks to the Knight Foundation. They gave money for an idea, and then it's been gradually evolving ever since. And we have, the secret is the support of such organizations on an ongoing basis for different aspects of our organization, but also the incredible board of governors that we have, passionate people who make this possible, give the money and help raise the money. And this is a remarkable group of people. And then hiring the right people like Stephen, you know, absolutely top of the line with his experience. And that's how it works.
So Stephen, give us a little snapshot, your musical background, your career.
Okay. I have had the amazing opportunity of working with a lot of great organizations who are trying to create ill system inspired work, which is really relating to the communities that we're in, to music, and providing access to all of the children in the communities that historically have not been able to because of socioeconomic background or the
El
culture.
El Sistema. Okay.
And it is inspired by what was founded in Venezuela in 1975 by Maestro Jose Antonio Abreu, and has really inspired the world to re-examine how music relates back to the communities that we're in and how we can make sure that that is an integral part of every child's development into a wonderful human being. So I've been able to work with the LA Phil with their project, which is now artistically led by a product of El Sistema from Venezuela, Gustavo Dudamel, and I had the honor of working in that project along with a Harmony project, which is providing the teachers for those classes. And then I was also able to participate with New England Conservatory during a fellowship that was initiated by Jose Antonio Abreu and New England Conservatory to train people on how to create these programs in different environments throughout the world. And through that, I was able to have an opportunity with the Allentown Symphony to create an El Sistema inspired project, which is still existing now and being run and continues today. And through that work, I was ultimately put in touch with Miami Music Project, where they invited me to an interview process to take over the educational programming aspect of it. And I've just been really honored and happy to be here to see what's going on and see how we can continue to do great work with the kids.
So now, how long have you been here?
I've been here since June, and that makes just over 6 months.
Well, let's talk about the three of us. Let's talk about we want to draw young people in, and certainly taking away music from the curricula in schools is having an impact. What can we do about that? I mean, what can be done about that other than, I guess, things like the Miami Music Project would be the answer, but...
Well, it is essential. I mean, one of the reasons that such programs exist, that we, Miami Music Project, is because of the way music has been taken out of the schools. Happily, there are some signs that some of that initiative is being rekindled in the schools. But it's essential. It's so easy to cut music from the curriculum. But you have to question, why is it done? Because music of all the art subjects, of all the subjects, connects the two sides of the brain. And Nova University do a scientific study of the effect of our program on the young people in their other studies at school and social communication skills and all kinds of things, and there's no question the results are just outstanding. And the similar programs throughout the world will show you the same scientific data. So anyone that's interested in science, and I know a lot of the country isn't, but those that are interested in science these days, it's a known fact. So if you want to have better education, you must have music lessons.
Isn't that incredible? Because it does connect both sides of the brain. It teaches you also discipline. It teaches you so many things. So, Stephen, what are some of the initiatives you'd like to see or that you're putting into effect?
Well, I wish I could take credit for it. There's just a phenomenal team of people that are excited about this project and making it work. One of the things that we're excited about is the orchestra boot camp that has been happening, and it just happened yesterday, actually, and it was made possible through the Knights Arch Challenge, which actually is going to be accepting applications on April 4th. So if you are interested in getting funding for ideas like this to make arts accessible to your community, you can start applying on April 4th. We are incredibly fortunate to have the continued support of the Knight Foundation, who has made our programming possible at all, and to explore an idea like this orchestra boot camp, where the children are able to come all day to work with highly esteemed musicians like Maestro James Judd, to work with our teaching artists. And yesterday we were actually joined by the New World Symphony Fellows, who were able to conduct sectionals for our kids.
Wow.
And play side by side during the rehearsal with James.
So James, tell us what that was like yesterday.
Oh, it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. We took
Where were you, first of all? What school was it?
Which is the school called?
We were at Citrus Grove Middle School in Little Havana.
That's it. Okay.
And second time I've done a boot camp there, actually. And it was thrilling because we took on the third and fourth movements of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and Meistersinger Overture. So it was a big challenge. And what was great was, because of this intensive work that our conducting, teachers do, who are amazing, the team that Stephen leads are so dedicated and work every week, three, four times, five times a week. And then the help of the New World Fellows as well was amazing. And then they sat in and played and gave confidence to these young people. So it was thrilling because it's raw talent, you know. It's not perfect playing,
right.
There were some amazing sounds that came out yesterday. And the energy in the room is terrific. And the opportunity just to play, make music together, it's thrilling for everybody.
And what impact does that have, to have these more accomplished musicians with these younger students who are not so experienced?
Well, it just gives them that extra sort of confidence. If you hear the sound of a New World Symphony player next to you or just behind you, or one of our teaching artists playing confidently, you play better. It's like sport, tennis or something.
Right.
You know, it just that you up your game. I can do that. Take risks.
And one of the ways you get better is just by playing with people who are better than you. You're not going to be improving if you're always the best student. So you have to put yourself in the situations where you're challenged and pressed and inspired to achieve greater things, because you can see it happening and it gives you an opportunity to learn in real time, even if you're not actually talking about it, but you're there, you hear it, you know what it's supposed to be, and you want to achieve that as a part of who you are. So it's just a phenomenal opportunity to work with really inspiring musicians like the New World Fellows, our teaching artists, and also with James.
I want to remind our listeners that we're on Periscope. Paul has all the cameras set up, Paul Leary, and you can see today's program live in addition to hearing it. You go to our Twitter account, which is at Topical Currents, and you can see today's program. And we're all spruced up for that, aren't
we? Yes, you have to remind us, is the fact.
No, radios must be just radio, you know. Now, can you talk, Stephen, about the chapters that you have of the Miami Music Project, where they are, and where you intend to maybe branch out to?
Well, right now we're operating in four different locations. We have a site that's in Doral, which is the first chapter that was established and has been continued till now. And we're very excited because we have some alumni of that chapter here that we'll introduce later.
Yes.
We also have a chapter in Liberty City at Charles Drew Elementary School. And then in Little Haiti, we've been working at Toussaint L'Ouverture Elementary School, where it is our second site that was founded. And then right now at Little Havana, at the Citrus Grove Middle School site, we have our oldest and most experienced group coming together, where another one of the students that we're going to introduce in a bit will be speaking about. And we're able to work with kids everywhere, from brand new students to kids who are continuing their education. And the goal is that we are not only able to provide every child with access to the music, but to be able to stay with them so they always have a place to go. Because if we're going to a community where the child wouldn't have been able to have that instrument in their hands in the first place, if we provide it for them now, where will they go when they're in middle school? Who can we work with to make sure that that child has a great musical development and can have that as part of their life?
Right. And talk about the criteria that you use choosing the communities that you go into.
That is a tougher question because there's a lot of variables. Naturally, part of the mission is about making sure that it's going to communities that need it, and also working with those communities to find out what the needs are. We can't go in with a solution without first asking the question of what are the struggles and how does music relate to what you're trying to achieve, what we are collectively trying to achieve inside of those communities. So there's been a lot of expanding within the last 4 years to sites that really have a great need given the conditions of the public school system. So going into Rao was a natural fit because of the influence of the community on the whole, being familiar with what an El Sistema-inspired program is. And naturally, it expanded into Little Haiti and Liberty City and Little Havana as the kids grew older and we were looking at moving to different communities. And I wish I could tell you what all those criteria were, but again, I wasn't here for all of it. But
right,
they have
right.
chosen well, and these are communities that definitely need it and are really thriving by having this experience.
James, do you want to talk about, I mean, there are obviously some disadvantaged populations that you want to get to these kids and...
Yeah, we'd love to be able to spread to more and more communities. I mean, not only in Dade County is there a huge need, in Broward County there's a huge need. I mean, one of the great things about the years we've spent developing this is that, you know, we kind of know, you know, we're learning all the time, but we know how to do it pretty well. And given that we're learning all the time. But the question is to go on doing it properly. So we're very cautious about taking on new things. We've got to be sure that it's sustainable in a community, that you don't just go in and run out of money in a year. We cannot do that. And that we can take the product at the very highest level into a community. So we are seeking to grow. It's always a question, of course, of finding resources, money. Then we can grow. We kind of know how to do it now. It's almost, in a crude way of putting it, it's almost like a franchise. You know, once you've got it up and running, it's ready to go anywhere now.
Well, we're going to talk more about the funding, the needs, and how children can get involved in it. Mm-hmm. For people listening, we're speaking with Maestro James Judd, world-renowned conductor and founder of the Miami Music Project. And he'll probably be embarrassed when I say he became the new music director and chief conductor of the Slovak Philharmonic Orchestra for their season beginning 2017 for 3 years. He's the music director and conductor of the Israel Symphony Orchestra, music director of the Little Orchestra Society in New York, principal conductor of the Asian Youth Orchestra, conductor emeritus of the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, God.
And in his spare time,
let's talk about the monies.
And in his spare time, we're also with Stephen Liu. He's a bassist and director of educational program for Miami Music Project. Stay with us. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Maestro James Judd, founder of the Miami Music Project, and the director of educational programming, Stephen Liu. Joining us now in the studio, however, we have Miami Music Project alumna, who now is a volunteer with the organization. She was with the program since its inception at the Doral chapter. Her name is Kelsey Milian.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Also with us is Martin Mayo. He's an oboist. Oh, and she's a violinist, by the way. Is an oboist. He's been with the program since its inception at the Doral chapter. And Martin Mayo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, let me ask each of you. You've been with the program a long time. Starting with you, Kelsey, how did you discover Miami Music Project?
I mean, there's an entire backstory to this, so
okay.
I'm going to give you the shortened version,
okay.
But I started playing violin when I was 9 years old in my school orchestra. We had a teacher start up an orchestra, and because of budget cuts, it fell, and kind of, you know, we were left, a lot of the members of the orchestra, we were left alone with no music in that sense, and eventually, I found this orchestra director within the community of Doral, because I've grown up in Doral my entire life. And she came from El Sistema. And so through what I call the nomadic years, where we would play in warehouses, we would play in schools, churches, and we finally found Miami Music Project. And somehow we just, you know, combined together and we started the first chapter.
Wow. And Martin, how did you find it?
Well, I started playing oboe in my my middle school in sixth grade, and I played in the concert band and everything, but I really wasn't that inspired. And then one day, one of my friend's parents was talking to them over dinner, and they told them about this great orchestra called the Miami Music Project that was super, super top-notch, and really would, and their children would go to that orchestra. And they told them about it, and, well, they thought it would be a great fit for me, and I tried it out, and I had to say from the first day I was captivated from playing in a really warm orchestra, you know.
Let me ask you, Stephen, now, so we're listening to Kelsey and Martin, and both of them kind of discovered Miami Music Project. It wasn't, like, out there. So how do we get the word out?
Well, we have a phenomenal marketing director and communications director named Maritza Diaz, who helps us make sure that it's up on social media, that our webpage is updated. And, you know, as a growing organization, we've progressively worked very hard at making sure that the word gets out. So we do recording, our recruiting efforts inside of the schools and the partners that we work with. We have some phenomenal site directors that are going to other community organizations that are near the school so that we can really work with students who are from the communities that we're actually operating in.
Kelsey, what does music mean to you in your life?
Wow, that's a tough one. No, actually, not really. Okay. Over the years when I've been learning how to play violin and then still continuing to learn because there's so much when it comes to music, it's kind of a way where you can express yourself in any kind of medium you want. I always think that if you are a musician, you have such an advantage when it comes to academics, other hobbies. I remember when I was little that whenever I had a school project, I had to do something about a country. So because I knew how to play violin, I would search up the music from that country and then to sort of spice up my presentation, to make me unique in that way,
right,
I would play that music during my presentations. Music has that ability to put you into a different level of academic growth, intellectual growth, in any way. And so I think I love music because of that.
And you, Martin?
Well, I know a lot of people say that music is a universal language, and that holds true in many situations. But for me, music would definitely have to be another way of communicating, a chance to reconnect with our past, with great composers that lived hundreds of years ago, even with people who wrote something last week, say my friend, and he asked me to play it. Just then I'm able to connect with who he is, and I'm able to share my ideas and share his.
How would you say music, playing music with others, teach you, what does that teach you about life?
Well,
I mean, not just playing, yeah, practicing and soloing, but actually playing in this orchestra.
Well, the orchestra is a very interesting community because we're a bunch of like-minded people. We all enjoy instruments and are different in many ways, but we all have music in common. And in a sense, an orchestra can teach us the importance that the community is in human life, because everywhere you go, you'll always be with other people, and you'll have to know how to interact with them and how to get together to achieve common goals.
Now, Kelsey, I see you've taken this another step further. You have the Miami Music Project Taking a Stand Leadership Seminar. And I was kind of blown away with the profundities that you came out. I saw just, you know, a 2-minute thing, and I thought, how did she learn that? She's 18, and it may have been sooner. So what is that leadership, the Taking a Stand Leadership Seminar?
When I was learning how to play violin within the orchestras of Miami Music Project, I kind of suffered from a lot of insecurities. I used to think I was not that good of a player. I couldn't achieve the same kind of level as some people that were so much better than I was. And then something just happened where I had this moment where I realized I don't have to contribute completely music into an orchestra. An orchestra is a society. You have your different interactions going on, different people from different backgrounds, but you're all working for one function, which is to produce music, to, you know, provide music for an audience, to just fulfill that need and love for music. And so I started taking dual enrollment classes at Florida International University, where I'm part of a dual enrollment program called Academy for Advanced Academics. And there I started taking sociology courses. And then I saw that connection where an orchestra is a society. And then what happened was, in sociology, we would talk about the different types of leaders in society, such as transactional, which have to do with giving orders, transformational leaders, which have to do with more inspirational methods and motivation. And the goal we learned was that a true leader has to have both in that sense. And so I kept thinking, Miami Music Project, these organizations, this community, this society has the ability to create leaders. I mean, in a way, I was already starting to develop my own leadership skills, where I started to go volunteer every other week and teaching little kids, you know, simple little bone movements or music or something like that. But then I started talking to children, you know, and I started loving to teach. And then I saw that how I had the power to inspire them. And if they took the opportunity of learning music, they could do it as well. And so this seminar that I created is basically giving the building blocks of sociology and social psychology, because social psychology has the ability to teach group work. And I mean, after all, that's what we're doing in an orchestra, team building. It really is. So I created this seminar where I taught a few students from my music project the basics in sociology and social psychology. And then in the end, it's basically an introduction of how to become a leader. And now their next step is using music as a tool to become that leader.
How does that make you feel when you hear that, James?
It makes me feel I'll never come to an interview again because you don't need me anymore. No, I mean, it's what you say is just what we all feel, and that's, you put it with such wonderful articulation, and we feel very proud and very, very happy to hear such things. Amazing, amazing. And what you're doing to teach the younger people and to impart your enthusiasm, your passion, and your intelligent knowledge, it's just what we dream of having happen at the MMP.
Exactly. Stephen?
It's phenomenal. I mean, Kelsey, I actually met her at that seminar in Los Angeles, where she was working on leadership. And even prior to my position here with Miami Music Project, she reached out to me to find out how she can create a leadership course for her students in Miami Music Project. And so the very first work I had over the summer here with the project was also seeing Kelsey implement this leadership course that she had generated for her younger peers. And it just really represents everything that we want to see happen. If the goal is to provide an avenue for the children to develop healthy relationships, learn how to express themselves and connect with other people, to touch someone without touching them, it's very powerful. And to see them assume an identity of power is incredibly valuable. And in light of a quote that Abreu says about Mother Teresa, and Mother Teresa says that the most horrific thing about poverty is not the lack of food or shelter, but the lack of an identity of being nobody. And from the instant a child holds an instrument in their hands as a part of an orchestra or sings as part of a choir, they intrinsically understand that they are a valuable member of a community that exists exclusively to be in harmony. And from that identity, they're able to turn into a beautiful person, whether they're a musician or not. But music is an integral part for developing that identity of somebody of importance, of value. So it's just really phenomenal to see what our students are accomplishing and who they're growing into, just like every child hopefully has the opportunity to do.
We're speaking about the Miami Music Project with Maestro James Judd, also who is the founder of the Miami Music Project, director of educational program. That was Stephen Liu you just heard. And also, we were listening to Kelsey Millian and Martin Mayo. When we come back, we have a treat for you, so stay right there. And we're back. It's today's Topical Currents. We're with Maestro James Judd, world-renowned conductor, founder of the Miami Music Project 8 years ago, and also Stephen Liu, a bassist and director of educational programming for Miami Music Project. We also have in the studio an alumna of Miami Music Project. That's Kelsey Millian. She's 18 years old and a violinist. And Martin Mayo is 16 years old. He's with the Miami Music Project Doral chapter, and he's an oboe player. Before we get really gorgeous music, Stephen, how do people find out about the Miami Music Project, and how can they join, how can their children join these chapters?
Well, we have a website that is up under miamimusicproject.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and one other place. We're online.
Oh, you're right.
I can't remember the fourth social media off the top of my head.
Twitter.
You can also... Twitter. Absolutely. And we can YouTube. Absolutely field any of your questions, which is via phone, which is 786-422-5221. And you can also reach out to us on any of our emails, because we have a lot of events that are coming up. We're very excited to reinitiate the Youth Orchestra, which will culminate in a performance at the Arts Center as a part of their Family Fest series this upcoming July. We will be having upcoming boot camp events where any child who plays the instrument can work on some very serious repertoire with our teachers and guest artists that could be coming in, like New World Symphony members or James Judd. And as a general student, you can always audition if you already play. And for new students, we are recruiting for additional students throughout the year, and we do the bulk of our admissions over the summer when we have a new class that's entering to the program. So you can always reach out for us online at www.miamimusicproject.org, on any of those four social media outlets, or just by giving us a call for more information.
And the number again?
786-422-5221.
Okay, so Kelsey and Martin. Now, James, are you going to be conducting?
Or two players?
Yeah.
I won't insult them with that.
No. All right, what are we going to hear?
Well, we're going to be playing something that we actually started working on about 30 minutes before this interview.
Okay.
So we'll see how it goes.
Now, I have a question for you before you start.
Yes.
I was listening to you, and I was watching you guys before the show. Do you have aspirations to conduct?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And compose?
And compose.
Okay, I thought so. All right, go to it. You can take those off if you want.
Okay, that'd be great.
Says the maestro. So that was just something you just came up with. I said you have 20 minutes before the show starts, or 30 minutes, right?
Just like that, yes.
Just like that. Martin, what do you feel like you want to give back to the Miami Music Project?
Well, in reality, I owe the Miami Music Project so much, because they're really the ones that inspired me to pursue music. You know, playing with all those musicians and making friends in the project, all of that inspired me. So I have to say that while my aspirations may be, you know, to go out of state for college, look to learn as much as I can in my field, I always want to come back here and help out, you know, bring classical music back to Miami and make it grow, because that's really important in our fields.
You know, the state of classical music, do you think, James, that, and that's beautifully said, by the way, Martin, do you think that it seems like it's a little better than maybe 5 years ago here in this country, that maybe, I was talking to a friend this morning, that millennials are embracing classical music a little more than the generation before?
I think there's a lot of wonderful initiative from new generation of players, musicians coming out of Curtis and Juilliard and all the other colleges, looking to go out into the community to play music, bring music. A lot of great educational initiatives like the Miami Music Project. Wonderful new halls, orchestras still existing in every city, every town, enthusiastic audiences. You can't kill it off, and it comes, perhaps it's had a bad wave following the economy. But it's alive and kicking, and I think here in Miami we have so many great initiatives, world-class music happening, of course, and you know, we've got to see that grow and grow and grow. We want to see younger audiences. We all do.
Right.
Anyway, I'm very, very optimistic about the future.
Stephen, you too?
Absolutely. I think for projects like Miami Music Project, what we are doing by engaging with the community with the instruments and in orchestra formats and in choirs is we're making it relevant to their lives again. And so how can people be passionate about hearing a professional orchestra if they don't personally connect to it in any way? And just by hearing Martin's story and Kelsey's stories and the over 470 other stories of the children that we work with, is just a phenomenal representation of how we are making music relevant to our communities.
Okay. Are you still looking for donations of instruments?
Oh, yes. We were always looking. I mean, okay. Something that never stops. We have more and more young people. We need more and more instruments.
And funding?
Yes. Always. I mean, it's the more money we get, the more young people will be able to have this wonderful experience. It's as simple as that.
How has music changed your life, Kelsey?
I think the ability with music, being able to play an instrument, sets you apart from a lot of other people in society. However, there's a way when it comes to music that you're able to do so many different things. I started last year to compose a little bit on my violin, and I started to see how with the violin, not only just playing, you can use any kind of sound within the violin. Sometimes knocking on the wood represents something in a composition that I might make, you know. I kind of think of it kind of like another voice because I love to sing. So it's my extension to my voice, another way I can express myself.
Martin, are you going to pursue this for your career?
Definitely. Yes.
Well, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody because I have a request. I've asked Martin to play Gabriel's oboe from the movie The Mission, which I love, and he has agreed. So we're going to say goodbye to Maestro James Judd from the Miami Music Project and world-renowned conductor. Thank you, James, for being back.
Oh, thank you, Bonnie. It's been great.
It's been a pleasure. Stephen Liu, Director of Educational Programming for the Miami Music Project. Pleasure to meet you. Delighted to have you.
Likewise.
Kelsey Million, the best to you. You're a remarkable young woman, and I wish you the best.
Thank you.
And Martin Mayo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Was magnificent. Thank you so much. Thank you for tuning in. Our program was produced by Polly Landis with technical direction by online producer Paul Leary, who also periscoped today's entire program. Additional assistance from lead producer Richard Ives. Audio archives at our website, WLRN.org. More information at our Facebook page, facebook.com/topicalcurrents. Joseph, I think, alone returns tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Talk about nature links for lifelong learning. And Linda Gassenheimer's Food and Dining has news about the Burger Bash, part of the South Beach Food and Wine Festival. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank all of our guests. Thank you. Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper. Thank you for listening this hour. Stay tuned for Here and Now. Up next, from NPR News.